The case method is a method which began years ago at two places, the Harvard Business School and the Harvard Law School. In the early days, it was used primarily to teach students law and business. The Harvard Business School today, and to a lesser degree, the Harvard Law School, teach exclusively by the case method. That is to say, they really just have cases which the students then have to analyze and to develop responses to. Several years ago, a bunch of seminary teachers got together to try to use this method in the teaching of theology and ethics and church history and a number of other disciplines. And this has grown up into something called the Case Method Institute, and it's a method that is used primarily in religion, not as an exclusive tool that you use in a whole class, but as an attempt to take materials that you're learning in class and apply them to some sort of case. In almost all cases, these are cases that are true to the degree that they actually happened, but names were changed and situations were changed slightly. Sometimes the characters are composites of several people or something like that. But basically, the effort is to try to find a life situation where the theory or the other learning that one does in classes has a concrete application. The idea being that one learns and facing situations which have a real-life quality to them. One can do a whole lot of things with this method. One can teach ethics with it, obviously. This is a case which has to do primarily with ethics. But just as well, this case could be used in the teaching of New Testament. What does the New Testament say about some of the elements which are relevant to this case, for example? And so this method has been used in a number of areas and has a quality to it, as you see, where the teacher doesn't seem to teach. Don't be deceived. A teacher can use a lot of control with this method in his or her teaching. But the effort here tonight would be for you to contribute and me to some degree. I'm not going to be too steering tonight. You can steer this completely, but to hopefully through the discussion which develops that we teach each other and get at some of the problems which underlie this case. I've used this case before in Redmond, Washington, which is a rather wealthy suburb of Seattle, the bedroom community of Seattle, and I'm interested to try it here tonight because I suspect that the conclusions and the points of view will be considerably different than I got in Redmond, Washington. Of the 80 people that were in that group, 8 of them were real estate agents. And you can, from reading the case, get some idea of where the main line of thinking went. It's going to be interesting to see tonight whether we have a different line of thinking. Let me start then, well, that is an introduction. I'd like to start the case by just getting straight some of the characters in it, and then perhaps we can proceed to some of the issues in the case itself. Who can tell me, and I'm going to write these on the board until the board gets filled up. Usually it would be helpful to have a bigger board, but we have certain limitations here, and this is quite fine. Then I'll probably erase some of the material, but it helps me to get the things down that are said and to help me to listen a little bit as we proceed. Who are some of the characters in the case, and what can you tell me about these characters? Anybody, just volunteer. Name me a character, anyway.
David Trapp.
David Trapp. What can you tell me about David?
He's a lawyer.
Lawyer. Everybody can contribute.
Had a wife named Nancy.
Yeah, okay. Nancy is another character.
Important.
All right. What else do you know about David?
He's got a piece of property.
He owns a piece of property. How did he get the property? He inherited the piece of property. Where is the property?
Clark Lake.
It's on a lake near... Oh, God, it doesn't say large lake. It's on a lake, right?
Beautiful name.
Clark Lake?
Yeah.
This is
probably polluted.
Apparently not, because they still use water sports on it. It's named Clark Lake. Okay, where does he live? Toledo? How many of you ever been in Toledo? A lovely town. You can understand why David Trapp wanted to get outside of Toledo, I think.
John Denver's song about it.
I don't know that.
Marvelous.
We have to have it singing to me sometime. Okay, what else?
He's ambivalent about building.
He's ambivalent about building. Okay? What are his options?
Sell the property.
Okay, could sell the property. Option. What else could he do?
Build a cabin.
Build a cabin? Where does he get the money for the cabin?
He inherited that.
He inherited that too. Okay. Okay. Anything else you know about David Kress? What is he? What, he's a lawyer. What does he do in his law work?
He's concerned about social justice.
He seems to be concerned about social justice. What is the? What gives you that idea?
Well, he spends 15% of his time doing free legal work for people who can't afford a lawyer, and that concern carries over into his ambivalence about building.
Okay.
He wants to do the right thing. He doesn't want to do the selfish thing.
Okay, he doesn't want to do the selfish thing. That 15% is called, in the legal terminology, is called pro bono work. It's kind of a contribution in one way or another to various causes that he does. What else does you know about David? What else does he do on the side?
Community affairs, active.
He's active in community affairs. He's a member of a state organization, it says. He's active in church affairs. What does he do, in church affairs?
He teaches adult education class.
Or at least leads the... Okay. Church and community. Okay. Anything else you think is important about David? Okay. What can you tell me about... Someone brought up Nancy Trapp. What can you tell me about Nancy? What does she do? She's a buyer for a furniture store. Okay. What else?
President of the PTA.
All right.
Takes her work home.
What does she feel about the cabin?
Build it.
Good for the kids.
And who else?
Herself, yeah.
Okay. What else do you know about Nancy?
She thinks that they give enough.
She thinks they give enough. What do they give?
Time.
What?
Time.
What else?
Money.
How much?
Over 10%.
They sort of tithe, huh?
Yeah.
Not the church necessarily, but there is a kind of broader understanding of tithing, which many people hold, I think, that not necessarily all goes to the church. What else could you say about Nancy? What's her problem? Maybe she doesn't have a problem.
Well, her work invades her weekend.
Her work invades her weekend. She has something, I think, a problem that many people, many women and men in American communities have, is that they're stretched too thin. And they got into a kind of race that is pressure-packed and very difficult to find time for leisure. I think that maybe there's a hint that this characterizes Nancy as well. Okay, anything else you want to say about Nancy? We're just getting familiar with the people in this case.
She also mentioned that it's all right to build a cabin because Jesus enjoyed life.
Did Nancy say that?
No. Yeah,
that was pretty much. I didn't think that was Nancy.
Cleo.
Okay. Cleo Parks.
That was a different character. So since someone mentioned Cleo, what do we know about Cleo?
College degree.
Say again?
College.
She's a lawyer. Okay.
Likes to swing.
Likes to what? Swing, did you say? Joel?
That's what I said. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, there's a hint there. What's the hint there?
The finer things in life.
The finer things in life, it says. What did she combine that with, though?
Trips to the Holy Land.
That was a little zinger. This character really didn't go to the Holy Land, but I thought that was...
Okay.
It's very interesting. Some people think that going to the Holy Land is a great religious pilgrimage, when it really is a very consumptive kind of style of living, depending on how you do it, of course.
If you walk on water, it can be very cheap.
Well, you know about Clea in this case. Did you get a case? A couple of your case?
No.
What else do you know about Clea?
She's on the board of a halfway house.
We're on the board of a halfway house. Okay, and?
Do you remember the church?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And active, apparently. Okay, anything else?
What does she do? What does it say? Is it saying about her law practice, her law work?
She
like David gives 15% for pro bono work. Okay. Now I'm going to erase David and start with another character. Who else is in this case?
Nathan.
Okay. What? What do you know about Nathan?
Pastor.
Oh, good. You like pastors, huh?
Former property owner, so.
Yeah, he owned a piece of property. What did he do with it?
He gave the money to the halfway house.
And then what did he do?
He wants to start a New Testament community.
Okay. Start a New Testament community. What's a New Testament community? What would that be like, according to Nathan?
Possessions in common and consumption limited
basic
necessities.
That early church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, model. They're both right. Model on Acts 2 through what? 6, 4, 5, 6? There's several references to a community which that grew up in Jerusalem, where things were, it says, held in common. It's not quite clear that everybody gave everything up, but that it was a communal style to the living. The German sociologist Ernst Troeltsch called it love communism. That's a name some people object to because of the word communism, but what's meant there is a kind of communal style. I don't know if it would be like Holden, but it would be a communal style anyway. Possessions held, at least, if not in common, in a certain sense of giving and sharing. What else do you know about Nathan? Anything else important about him? What would you say? Go ahead.
He said he probably wasn't Lutheran.
Probably, why not?
I haven't met many Lutheran pastors like that.
Oh, have you met many pastors like that at all?
Actually, no.
He began to preach and teach on Roman principles, which seems to have influenced partly that decision or added to the mud, at least the David Nancy's dilemma.
Okay. He's kind of one side of the dilemma which they face, isn't it? Who's the other side?
Clea.
So there's a kind of split that he's caught between, which two characters have sort of outlined for him. Well, we have a few other characters in the case. Does anyone want to say anything further about the character Nathan? Who else is in this case?
Al.
Who's Al?
Al's a friend who offered to build a cabin for David and Nancy.
Okay, he's a builder of some sort. Friend and builder, he's offered to build. What else? What would be characteristics of his building?
Used lumber.
And what else?
Needed to work.
Say again?
He said he needed to work.
He needed to work. Apparently he's unemployed or at least low on work. Right? And what will the job do for him?
Give him employment, obviously, and some wherewithal to live. He's also going to use, apparently would like to use insulation and thermal pane glass in this cabin and so forth, right? There are a few other, two other characters which we can mention, which are
the kids.
What's significant about the kids?
They know they're having their water sports.
Say what?
They're young and haven't learned their waters.
Okay, young.
In the family conversations and meetings. Mm-hmm.
And they're significant in this case for the comment about the decision-making in the family, which apparently includes them to some degree. At least their voices are heard. Okay, these are the characters in the case, I think. Maybe there's something else that anyone would like to add to the character list we have before I proceed to discuss some of the issues that are involved here. Okay, what are some of the issues involved in this case? I'm going to start over here. What's at stake here? What are some of the deeper issues? I mean, obviously there's a surface issue, which is what?
Building a cabin.
But of course, as most problems like this, that is only the tip of the iceberg. And there's a lot of different issues. When you think about what are the issues here, try to think of a wide ranging. Obviously to build a cabin, but there's other things I think at stake here that this case can be used to illustrate. One, to build or not. What else? What other issues do you can to identify?
Nancy's peace of mind.
Weekend interruption.
Say again?
Weekend interruptions.
Okay. Peace of mind, weekend interruptions. Yeah. Maybe this issue I sort of hinted at before, being stretched too thin, needing peace of mind, the weekends become a period of work. As well, instead of having a Sabbath recreation.
An increase in family life.
What?
An increase in family life.
Yeah, okay, let's say put Nancy in family life. Mm-hmm. All right. I don't know if many of you feel that, but I think there in many of our communities, the problem that Nancy has is one that's not altogether unusual today. I think 50% of women, of wives, spouses are now employed. I'm not quite sure that figure, but I think that was the latest figure that I heard. About 50% of women who are married are now working, so that problem is increasing considerably of people finding less and less family time. Indeed, the whole issue of the family itself is one that could be raised by this case. Okay, what else do you see as an issue?
David's social conscience.
Okay, David's social conscience. Okay, what would be the issue there? Is that bad or good?
Well, whether he should be focusing on himself or on charity.
Okay. Should you start by being self-centered versus other-centered, okay? Mm-hmm. In a sense, what are legitimate personal needs to be met over against giving what you have to the other? What might the Bible say about that, do you think?
Well, we'll skip that one. That was obviously didn't draw any fire.
That was a dud. Okay, what other? This method is amazingly flexible, right? When I fall like that, I have a question, probing question, I can try again. What other issues do you see?
Al Messer's employment.
Okay, employment. What's the issue there? Employment of Al Messer, but
it's partly friendship.
Okay, friendship, employment versus the group this morning was discussing. How does one live in a world with injustices and perhaps a lack of energy resources on the one hand versus the friendships and employment and indeed the family life on the other hand? So
we're just trade-offs.
Well, yeah, I'll use that word again, like I did this morning. Trade-offs. And how does one deal with the trade-offs that, in this case, are involved? Obviously, there are some trade-offs. Clea represents tries to represent that perspective, I think, very much. She says what? There are one can be concerned, perhaps, at the same time there are legitimate personal needs, and so forth. What other issues? What are some of the biblical issues involved? Are there any biblical issues involved here? Another dud.
No, just trying to find the whole matter of quote-unquote responsible Christian living.
Okay.
Responsible Christian lifestyle.
I like that word myself.
I don't know what it means exactly, but...
I always like to think of it means, it comes from part of my understanding of faith, that there is the God's gift and then there's the human response, both part of the dynamics of faith, and we are able to respond, therefore responsible. I think it's a very good word.
Just a strain of that, or part of that, the whole, you know, how does one begin to interpret the whole biblical narrative? Do you take those things literally?
What's that? What biblical material would be relevant to this case?
Well, part of it is the part of Acts that they were obviously, or the pastor seems to have been using. I suppose you could take the Matthew passages about feeding the hungry and the sick and the naked and all this.
Mm-hmm.
The prophetic tirades against
the
rich.
Prophetic texts again.
Amos, for example, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and best about every prophet in the book has a talking about the misuse of wealth and possessions.
And wasn't there something about a call to the prophets to justice and care for the poor that
mm-hmm.
was even stated in the case?
Well, how about some of the teachings of Jesus? What was Jesus' position regarding possessions? Or is that clear?
Well, he didn't have any.
Okay.
Perhaps he had some, but in the scriptures they don't mention any.
All right. In fact, in several places, in fact, he sends out his disciples of Matthew, what is it, 10 someplace?
No bag, no purse.
No bag, no purse, no nothing.
Leave boats.
Yeah, and you'll be provided for. There's a kind of rigor in parts of the New Testament ethic, and particularly in the Sermon on the Mount, but that doesn't necessarily have to do with possessions. Though there's that bit about the lilies of the field, many of their toil must spin, they're kind of being not anxious about the future, but of going a kind of extra mile, of being kind of selfless, and a total discipleship kind of perspective. And it's certainly very strongly stated in the biblical material in the New Testament. On the other hand, there are materials in the New Testament which suggest a kind of more laid-back style, if you will, of appreciation of life by Jesus. In Paul's communities, there was no attempt to be have this communal style, but one could look at a whole number of materials in the biblical narrative and use this case to explore the whole biblical position on riches, possessions, and responsible consumption and so forth. And then, finally, after one's explored the biblical materials, you could use this case to suggest, well, how would you apply the materials that you have uncovered in the Bible? Some people think that applying the materials it becomes a kind of direct guideline that you should do exactly what Jesus did. Is that correct? Is that the proper way to apply a kind of biblical or theological guideline, that you do exactly what Jesus did as best you can? Or is there some other way to apply the Christian materials which isn't exactly that way? A very important problem in Christian ethics is, what do you do with the materials that are available? How do you apply them? And I think that one way to do it is a direct application, but I sometimes think that because of the differences of times and cultures, that may be a little superficial, and you may need to get into it a little deeper. What other issues? Can you cite any other issues in this case? Okay, well, maybe that's enough. There are some others, I think, in this case, but probably enough to get at the issues that we would want to talk about tonight. Yeah.
I don't think it's an issue, but Cleo irritates me because of her interference with David and his wife Nancy's decisions.
Hmm.
And I don't know whether that's an issue that comes into this part.
How the rest of you feel about that? You irritated by Cleo?
Her lifestyle. I mean, I trying to read behind the story, I sort of like the position she takes, but her personality grates on me. She just seems like a pushy bitch.
Oh, she does.
You know, it's just the way it's written, I guess. You know, she hit him from the other side, and she thought Nathan was a perfectionist, and you know, come on.
Well, she's kind of twitting him. She's making
yes,
fun
right.
of him, having fun with, yeah. David, with David's kind of problem in this case.
Big grin.
The grid.
Also accuses that David has no right, you know, put his values on his wife and his family.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think he's trying to do that. I don't think he's trying to.
Oh, you don't? People in Redmond thought he was terrible. And I was explained before that I did this case in Redmond, Washington, which is a fairly wealthy suburb of Seattle. But it's very interesting, the different perceptions that you get in different groups. But you don't think Davidson, by pushing his morality, is Nancy, we said, had some problems with David's morality, at least. She wanted to build the cabin, right? And now David's got a decision to make. He builds the cabin. He is agreeing with Nancy's value system, I guess. If he doesn't, he's kind of pushing his own value system on her, isn't he? Hmm?
Is it really
another issue is how do you make family decisions?
Is it really his value system, or is he undecided about that? I kind of got the impression he was undecided about whether that was really his value system or not.
All right, he's ambivalent, certainly. Yeah. We used that word at the beginning, ambivalence, about David's position in this. There's another issue, by the way, is that there's a question of guilt. It's very interesting that no one has raised that. The Redmond people picked that one up right away. I'll share that with you. They thought he was on a guilt trip. This is a Lutheran church, by the way, not a Presbyterian church. But they thought that David was on a guilt trip and he ought to feel so damn guilty about things and go ahead and live bravely.
Yeah,
what?
Build the cabin over.
Oh, yeah. There's not much doubt about it. The majority opinion in there was that it wasn't a consensus by any means. There were a lot of people who were raising the other side. What do you think David should do?
Sell everything and move to Holden. Wouldn't have to build a cabinet. You'd have one of the empty cellars.
Would that solve his problem?
No.
Is Holden in some way an avoidance of that problem, or is that same problem exist right here at Holden?
It's right the same.
I mean, Holden. Let me pose the question in a different way. If you were the president of the American Lutheran Church and you were faced with in 1957 with the decision of whether to build a Holden or not, would you do it or not? Would you build your cabin in the woods for the church or not?
Fortunately, he didn't have to make the decision. Well, they did. They said no.
Who did? The church did?
Nah.
I don't know the history.
Yeah, the national leadership did. Yeah. But never that.
How did it get in the hands of the American Lutheran Church then?
Well, a few lay people in Seattle said they'd do it anyway.
I see. And then the American Lutheran Church graciously accepted with a bunch of other the cabin building of a bunch of other people, right?
The ALC doesn't have any ownership of it at all. No one.
They don't?
No, it's an independent board composed of people from five cities.
I misunderstood. I thought the place was owned by the American Lutheran Church.
No, just have representation from it.
So they avoid that question.
Right.
I see. Well, okay, if you were the president of the American Lutheran Church in 1957, would you build a cabin in the woods called Holden or not? You would? I see one nod. You're on. Why would you do it?
Because of the things that a person can learn while they are here to apply to life outside, to experience a different lifestyle, to see if it is for you or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you think David should build his cabin? David and Nancy, because there's a shared decision making here, by the way.
I really haven't decided yet.
You haven't decided yet? Good. That's honest. That's serious. An ambivalence here. What are some of the rest of you think? Should he build or should he not build? Should they build or should they not build?
Why? They got more options than that.
All right. Options. Let's just stop a second and look at the options. Joel, what do you think?
Well, what a big portion of Nancy's problem is being interrupted on the weekend. She can just unplug her phone from Friday to Sunday.
Okay. You think that'd work?
It works. I found it'd be a very effective solution.
What happens on Monday night? You ever been around Monday night when that happens?
Well, you only take one phone call at a time.
What?
If you've had enough Monday night, unplug it.
Unplug it Monday night.
Yeah, huh? If you've had enough.
All right. So instead of building, unplug the phone.
No, it just means like there's no building home.
somehow I have a funny feeling, Joel, that that may be treating the disease rather than the cause of the symptoms rather than the cause of the disease.
Well, it's as far as solutions go, it is of the same quality as getting away for the weekend.
Okay. What other options do you see?
Take the kids to the local pool.
Take the kids to the local pool.
Okay. Anybody think? Well, one is the bill, of course. Mm-hmm. Use that as an option.
Yes, an option to do as the pastor did. You know, mm-hmm. to sell or to donate that cabin to build and use the cabin for some other
person,
several purposes other than just his own.
That was the one that Redmond picked out right away.
Give it to Nathan and form the community.
Tax purposes.
All right. Build the cabin and use it for
love commune.
For the pastor's commune.
Yeah. Well,
I think that's the opposite.
Some of the folks in Redmond thought that he ought to build it and then open it up to poor children in Toledo, or the some of the people in the halfway house. And then I asked the question, well, if you were the people, what do you think the people next to David on the lake would say when he did that? You ever been involved in trying to locate a halfway house for drug addicts in a neighborhood? What happens? Norma?
You don't get it.
You don't get it, why not?
It goes to the village council.
Yeah, and what does the village council do with it?
They turn it down because people won't vote them in if they vote for something that will bring down the neighborhood, will threaten the kids, and do all kinds of things. A halfway house brings all the undesirable elements into the neighborhood. Suburban people don't have undesirable elements. Their kids aren't a problem. Of course, people in halfway houses are. You knew that, didn't you?
No, that's all information.
Any other options?
One option is, but I don't think it was even hinted at in the story, was to build a cabin and move there.
50 miles commute?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not suggesting that is an option. I don't think it's terribly viable.
Why not? Why isn't it still viable? why isn't that option viable?
Well, I didn't pick up that they were considering the changing of their work. You know, that was alluded to, that they were going to cut back in their work. That doesn't seem to be a hint of that.
Well, they could commute.
Might be. They could be.
A lot of people commute from
I don't know what the
commute's
like into Toledo. I mean,
I don't either.
Where's 50 miles from Toledo?
Obviously, since I wrote the case, the persons involved didn't live in Toledo. I'll tell you that right now.
I have problems with the assumption that because this family has certain needs, they have to be answered by a piece of property.
Mm-hmm. No, he's inherent. He has the property.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he has to satisfy those needs on that piece of property. I get very bound by that decision.
Why?
Because personally, I wouldn't want to live. I wouldn't want to be bound to having to go to one place every summer or every time I turned around. I would want my kids to have other experiences, and I would. I've never wanted a country place.
But you see, some people who might appreciate
people,
that kind of thing, you would have no problems with them building a cabin. Some people like to travel around, and like Clea, she doesn't build a cabin, but she travels around, yet it's a very consumptive lifestyle that she lives. Do you see problems with that?
Yeah, I just don't see any point to having a piece of real estate that sits there to be used occasionally.
Why? What's the principle that you're applying some sort of ethical judgment here, and I'm wondering what it is. I'm trying to probe beneath the judgments here to see why you're making it and on what basis you're making ethical judgments. I don't want to push you or anything.
No, you can push me, but I can't, I guess I don't know quite how to isolate those. It doesn't make sense to me to have an encumbrance that is not, to me that's an encumbrance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To have more than what I need. and I don't need to have two houses at one time.
Need? What is there? Do you, what kind of definition of needs do you, are you implying here? I mean, we have obviously
well,
basic
needs.
Well,
the needs are to get away from one's arena where one's working, mm-hmm. to have a chance for kids to have some other experiences with water sports and things like that.
Okay, this is their needs.
And I think that, you know, a terribly bound way to satisfy those needs.
Okay.
That's just my, you know, I guess I can't answer on the ecological part or anything, because my feeling is just that bound to one thing, then you always have to go there.
Mm-hmm. But there's no...
It's lifestyle, I guess, more than anything else.
But it doesn't, the lifestyle questions that you're raising doesn't have anything to do with questions such as injustices in the world, poor people, sustainability of resources, things like that. I mean, really, there's an issue here about the sustainability. What the question deep down, at least for me, would be, how can one have a second home when some people in the world don't even have one? I think it's stated someplace in the case. But I don't hear you saying that that is a particular problem for you.
Well, it's not that it isn't a particular problem. It is a problem. I see that more on a larger scale, in the same way as I see at meals that when a kid leaves something on the plate, we talk about all the poor in the world who would like to have that. But, you know, you don't really mean that that thing that's left on the plate is going to be make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But you live with that kind of understanding because it has global kinds of meanings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no child in my house leaves anything on a plate. They get it back the next meal.
With your cooking, because
no,
I would, it must be delightful, I would.
Thankful.
I'm serious.
No, I'm a witch on that, because, and my point is that there are hungry people in the world. Now, nobody thinks that whether we eat everything there or not, it's going to change needs. But we live in a symbolical way up with a lot of those things. And that... I'm getting myself into a lot of hot water here, and I don't.
No, I won't. I won't cook you. I'm not cooking you. I'm very interested. You're starting pro, and I think one of the geniuses of this method is that it makes some people mm-hmm. probe beneath to. If the person who's running the case is very good, he or she can push the probing, and to a point where the person isn't hurt, but can push the probing to the point where people are thinking new things, or at least thinking in different ways.
Yeah, you're moving me into some other thinking that I didn't come out with here. I just dislike being bound to a piece of property.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what are some other comments on this? What might you do, and why might you do it?
I can notice that. I noticed one thing at the end here. Nancy says that. If we, well, she lists these different things that she thought was bothering David. And then at the very end, she says, you will miss your favorite sport. So apparently he too was into, he wanted the water sport thing. Why can't they keep the property and get out there with their water sports without building at the lake? And still give a portion of that gift, or you keep part of their property and give a portion of that gift.
Mm-hmm.
Then the guilt part starts to diminish.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder though, what kind of water sports they need. I mean, what kind of things do kids need to learn how to do?
Fishing,
or
sailing.
No,
could be rowboating. Could be motorboating.
Water
skiing.
No, that's a materialistic thing too, and also giving them fuel.
Is fishing? I wonder.
No.
That's not canoeing.
But you don't need to have property to fish.
No. In Toledo, Ohio.
But the
crazy fish in Toledo, Ohio.
that's Cleveland, where the Cuyahoga River caught on fire several times.
But the option that's similar, like number five, where, you know, like obviously the piece of property there on Clark Lake isn't going to do somebody starving in India much good. About something like, I mean, where it would be similar to number five there, would be build a cabin, rent it out for 50 weeks of the year, Because if people there who are going to be there, you know, all year, would probably take a vacation somewhere else. So while they take a vacation, they could, you know, swap vacations, kind of a thing. And basically take, say, rent from that and donate it to something. Whereas if they sell a property and give away and take money and do it, it's kind of a one-time shot. You know, once the money's rooted somewhere, it's gone. Whereas maybe something where they build a cabin is kind of another use of that, kind of goes along that same kind of lines, but it's an ongoing thing. It's not going to just end.
What do you do with those things in the Bible that we talked about of give all you have to the poor and follow me, live without possessions, the Son of Man has no place to lay his head? What do you do with all those things? I mean, you're obviously trying to find a compromise solution which will make David feel good. Well, what do you do with those biblical materials?
Yeah.
Do you throw them out? Are they irrelevant? What do you think? Does one follow those strictly in one's life? Are you a Christian if you don't follow those things?
They're a portrait of kingdom behavior, but they are not. We're not supposed to get up in this picture frame and act like that.
Why not?
Well, it's like
that's just that they're not intended for us.
What do you mean they're not intended for that? What are they intended for?
To give us portraits, to give us pictures, to give us models, examples, to give us...
Well, a model or an example would be something to follow, then, wouldn't it?
Oh, not literally.
Not literally?
No.
You mean you compromise it?
Yep.
Halfway?
Yeah.
Why do you compromise it?
Yeah, because it was, when it was originally spoken, it...
One reason you compromise is because he's not living in the kingdom of God.
That's right.
The reality of life as it's lived today is not it's not the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is yet to come, even though it's already present.
Yeah.
You cannot do it, obviously. You can't live the kingdom of God. And trying to do it turns you into Martin Luther before his great insights of trying to be the perfect monk.
It's like you wrote too in the essay that you handed out to us this morning. We're not all called to do the same thing. And Jesus didn't, you know, go up to every person that he came across in Palestine at the time and say, get rid of all your possessions and follow me. He called certain people. He left other people where they were. And we all have our different tasks, callings, abilities.
There is also a very strong indication in the Bible that he was accepted support for some very wealthy women, or relatively wealthy at the time. Zacchaeus, give half of what you have to the poor, or at least Zacchaeus said, I'm going to give half of what I have to the poor, and Jesus responded very favorably to that statement. On the other hand, to the rich man, he said, give all you have to the poor. And the rich man went away sad because he didn't want to give away his possessions. What's the relevance of that passage, do you think?
If I understand some of the scholarship on possessions in the New Testament, it's not possessions per se that's the problem, but the way in which possessions enslave one. That Christianity, whether one owns possessions or not, is not the issue, but the issue is whether that is something that controls you. And it's a kind of freedom from possession which seems to be the essence of the New Testament position. Though there's still materials in the New Testament that suggest giving all you have to the poor is an example, which at least in part is one, something that should be standard or a principle of activity, even though one never, of course, can achieve perfection in kind of norm or standard.
So what you're saying is that money or possessions aren't the evil, but the love of money or possessions.
The rich young man wasn't that his property was the problem, but his love of property was the problem. The whole biblical material is in fact very ambivalent on property itself. There's indications both ways in both Old and New Testaments. Well, in the Old Testament, the Jewish rabbis had no problems with poverty, with the misuse, even in the prophets, it's not so much any kind of statement against possessions, but against the misuse and the allowing for women and children and orphans to be oppressed at the same time that the people were using property in a very luxurious way. But that occurs in our age. There's 800 million people malnourished and impoverished in this world today. That's probably a conservative estimate. I mean, seriously malnourished and impoverished. There's probably another 800 million that are living in serious poverty. Yet
Americans make decisions every day, not about property like this, but color TV sets. You can take this as a question not about a camera, but about any kind of consumption element that you make. The stream in this case is made to make the point of what do you do in this kind of world when you do make consumption decisions. Do you buy a car? Do you buy a TV set? It's problems that each of us, I think, face as we try to find our way in a very ambiguous and strange kind of world. What would you do in this situation? Anyone else?
I'd build it, and I would try to push it further than used lumber and a discount window, and I would involve, or I would rent it for ridiculous prices, so that a lot of people would use it, and I would make it possible for the halfway house people to be there. And if it took having barbecues for the neighbors on either side to keep them happy, I'd have to do that.
Barbecues and beer?
Yeah, sure, whatever it took. But basically, to ignore their complaints. But I would go ahead and do it.
Why would you do that?
Do what?
Why would you do that, I asked him. What would be your ethical support and Christianity to that?
Ethical
support? Well, if indeed Christians claims to use faith as the basis of their life, and Christianity or Jesus Christ makes some sort of difference in the world, at least in your life, how would you support that action with Christian warrant, if I can use that term?
I would support it by saying that my not building it will not help one single person.
True. In fact, by building it will help Al Messer, by the way.
Yep, it'll help Uncle Al down the block when he's work, and it'll also help a lot of other people, including my family and me too. Mm-hmm. And not building it will help no one. It'll be a private aesthetic decision if I don't build it. And it will be only good for me and my spirituality, but it won't really do anything for anybody else. So I really would have to go ahead and do it.
Okay, is there anyone who disagrees with that position?
I do. I don't think in this situation of race that their life would really be any better for having it. Mm-hmm. All these things, you know, they can change anyway.
What does make life better, if I can use that was your term, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What does make life better, do you think? Are there certain aspects that you've had from your experience which would suggest to you, or from your own Christian experience, would suggest to you what is the life which is most fulfilling or whole making?
Well, I think all the things that Nancy and Dave say, that, you know, somehow they can get away from all the problems there. I don't think that would happen at all.
How do you get away from your problems?
You don't. You try to solve them.
Try to solve it. Okay. One could make the case that they were solving the problem in a way through this method. Okay. I'm just suggesting that. Now, Joel, you were going to object to the other chaplain over here. What would be your rationale? Why would you do what you want? What would you do and why?
Well, I guess I would find it difficult to see how taking and having a duplicate dwelling would make a qualitative change in life. I would have trouble with that. Having another tool to practice hospitality with would raise the question for me, well, am I doing what, practicing hospitality in the community where I live? I think my tendency would be for us to say, well, would it be possible to achieve those the general goal, that, you know, family goals or, you know, leisure goals without encumbering our life with another possession, without unbalancing the material possessions.
Or putting a strain on resources, even however small that they may be doing that.
Yeah.
What Christian faith would you use to support your position?
Well, two, I suppose. One is the idea of global justice. The division between rich and poor to make it as to work, the Christian mandate to work toward reducing that. And the other one is just to keep your life simple. That with no relation to justice, that's individual, personal.
You're able to hear the word of God when you have simplified your life, is that correct?
Well, yeah, I think that I think those sorts of material encumbrances are objected to, one, because they complicate your life and make so you can't hear. The other thing is that they unbalance the harmony and the community of people.
Mm-hmm. Who else would like to venture an opinion on this?
I'm having a problem. I think that with Nancy, I think just from what the description of her, I don't think that, like, with this idea, I don't think she would go along with something like that. I think that even though she says that she wants it for the children too, I think her feelings are basically selfish for the reasons why she wants the diamond though. And I don't think that she'd be open to ideas of common.
It does suggest that not entirely selfish. She has the concern for the family, at least as a stated concern. Whether or not that's the rational, you know, some people's stated reasons are mere rationalizations for selfishness. And you're suggesting that this may be the case, I guess.
I just get that feeling with how she says that they already do enough.
Uh-huh. Do you ever do enough for her son? They do prove pretty much. And of course, I set the case up that way. Sorry, guys. That's the trouble. You shouldn't do your own cases, but you should be doing others. This is intriguing, obviously. Okay. But then what principle are you articulating ethically when you say something like that about Nancy? Can you get beneath the statement that you just made to suggest that there's something about Christianity which gives basis for your evaluation of Nancy? I always want to push people back behind, I call it shooting from the hip decisions, you know. I should do that because, well, I feel good about it, or I think that's what they should do. But if we're going to start thinking more deeply about the life we live, then I think we have to probe and find, hopefully, we before we act, we have found the basis of our life in our faith. But when we're faced with decisions sometimes, we have to go back to find out where the guidelines lead us, or should lead us. Where, what underlies what you said, do you think?
I think it's something that's just always a conflict with my own life, to be feeling like whether I think I really need that. Is that really enough? Or am I just wanting it because I want it? I think maybe it's my own identity as Nancy.
What you're saying, maybe you're saying, is that there's a sense in which putting the self first is, at least in Christianity, is the opposite of being other-centered. The man for others, the one who died, gave himself so that others may live, and here may be a decision to put the self first and the hell with the rest of the folks. I didn't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I hear you trying to say.
Probably.
You know, I can't speak for you or anything like that. Okay, anyone else want to, or do you want to add any more? Anyone else want to comment? We don't have to carry this on forever.
I don't think I'd build it all. I'd leave the land and let it be the way it was.
Why?
Just for aesthetic beauty.
What phrases in Christianity can you find for that decision?
None. No.
What?
Well, God created the earth and it was good and gave it to man.
It was good.
And it was good. And man was
Would you do something unaesthetic to help a poor person?
Would I do something aesthetic?
Unaesthetic.
Unaesthetic to help a poor person? No.
Met a poor person had heat with you, trip line, parts of West Virginia, or Railroad Creek for copper.
For heat?
Hmm?
Oh, for copper. Wouldn't produce much heat.
I didn't say that.
Copper wouldn't produce much heat.
Oh, well, okay. But he needs wiring.
You were bringing it close to home.
Yeah, I was just trying to bring it that close. Well, obviously, I think one of the criteria is aesthetics. I don't know. It's hard to find too much support for that in the Bible. I don't know if anyone finds it. It's more Greek philosophy that one finds support for aesthetics. There's a very Greek word to start with. I suspect one can find, who knows, some good rationalization for aesthetics in the Bible. Anybody?
Well, if you're dealing with like wilderness, one good reason is that it gives us a measure of our use and subduing of the earth.
That's fair enough. But of course, most people complain if the poor folks, you know, come back here in droves to look at the wilderness. But, oh, you know, there's all real. I mean, there's a real solid complaint about wilderness freaks from people who, you know, the hoi polloi who live down in the flatlands who want to get up and see that beauty, but the wilderness freaks won't let them because they want to preserve pristine. You know, all crippled people have trouble getting back into that wilderness. And, things like that. You've heard those complaints, I'm sure. You can articulate them in a variety of ways.
Yeah, and there are serious objections to that because it's so self-effacing. You know, it says that human beings have no place in nature. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's particularly Christian.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to draw this to a close now. I hope that this has been somewhat instructive and probing and raising some issues for you. I personally don't think there's a solution to the problem. I think he can probably go either way. And that background, and by the way, the paper that I gave in the class this morning, I tried to suggest there, I think there are two valid Christian lifestyles, one of which is a kind of rigorous discipleship, more or less like Nathan pursued, the other being something I would call responsible consumption, which isn't just kind of excessive kind of consumption, but something that has a sense of consumption and responsibilities to other people as well. And I think both of those positions have Christian basis, and that probably David can rest easy with either decision, depending on what he does with his cabin and the decision to build. But that would be a personal opinion, which you may or may not share, and you can feel welcome to take any position you want, as long as there are certain elements of the decision, I think, that are spelled out. Somehow, freedom from possessions, a concern for the poor in one's activities. They're spelled out in the paper. I don't need to re-articulate them. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.